Hi, my name is Johnny Gartner, and welcome back to the Cedar 60 podcast. At Cedar 60, our mission is to engage with culture and politics from the distinctive lens of the gospel. Today, we are excited to have Dr. Rick Melson join us on the podcast to discuss leadership and Christian education. Dr. Melson, thank you so much for joining us today. We really appreciate it.
Well, thank you for the opportunity. Looking forward to the conversation, Johnny.
Absolutely. You're a Cedarville, you used to work at Cedarville. You're part of the Cedarville community.
That's right.
So we're excited to have you on the podcast. If you could just begin by kind of telling us a little bit about your career, what brought you through Cedarville and where you are now.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, I actually grew up in Southwest Ohio. I grew up just outside of Dayton, which isn't too far from Cedarville. I actually went to Murray State University, which is in Murray, Kentucky, Western Kentucky. I was there in the late 80s, and I actually studied music. My undergrad is in music. I felt called to ministry and transitioned from my undergrad to the Southern Baptist Theological Seminary, where I studied ministry and church music at the time, and Christian ministry and theology. And I went in 1992, which is a significant year because Dr. Moeller came in 1993, and I had the privilege of serving with Dr. Moeller. I actually was there from 93 with Dr. Moeller until 1998. And I had a tremendous opportunity to spend quite a bit of time with him. I served as director of admissions there at Southern, which was a great experience, and really enjoyed my time there. In fact, was highly impacted by Dr. Moeller and his leadership. And my wife actually served as Dr. Moeller's first secretary. So we were very close to the Moellers during that time. And it was a great opportunity to learn leadership, a great opportunity to learn about administration and higher education, and of course, preparing and equipping for church ministry, which is where I served. I actually left Southern in late 98, early 99, served in local church ministry for a number of years, traveled around the country in different states. From South Carolina to Texas, we moved to Minneapolis. I served with John Piper there for a number of years as a campus pastor, and had a great experience there, helped with Bethlehem College and Seminary, which is really where my heartbeat for Christian higher education began to develop and flourish. We were out in Seattle doing some similar work, and then came back to Minneapolis. And then from that point, moved back into Christian higher education. I served at Houghton College in 2012, which is in Western New York, as vice president for advancement. And then moved to Cedarville in 2016 as vice president for advancement, and served with Dr. Thomas White there through 2021. During those 5 years, led the campaign that's now the big $125 million campaign. By God's grace, we raised almost $100 million in 2 years, and just God's kindness in that relationship and partnership with the work that we did at Cedarville, which then opened the opportunity and for me to become president at Southwest Baptist University, which is in Bolivar, Missouri, where I currently serve and have the opportunity to lead a great institution here.
You've kind of really exemplified what my next question is, and it is that leadership is really a lifetime process that, you know, doesn't just happen overnight. It takes a long time to develop, and you never really stop learning how to lead. And leadership has been an important part of your personal journey, whether that's been in your passion to pursue higher education or just leadership in general. Could you maybe just start by explaining why leadership is so important, not just as Christians, but also just in general?
Yeah, absolutely. Well, you know, it's leadership's a relationship between leaders and followers. And organizations, any kind of organizations, businesses, churches, institutions, hospitals, everyone needs leaders, but we need good leaders, and we need equipped leaders, leaders that have the competencies and the character and the commitment and the chemistry for every organization to help that organization thrive. Leadership ultimately begins with leading yourself. I mean, you know, when we talk about some of the characteristics of leadership, it's really rooted in first leading ourselves. That gives us the opportunity to lead others, that then gives us the opportunity to lead organizations. And, you know, not everyone's called to leadership. I think that's important, although I do believe that anyone can become a leader. You know, there's always been the big question, are leaders born or are leaders made? And I firmly believe leaders can be made. Now, we all have to be born to be leaders. Many of us are born with certain traits that are helpful in leadership. But the reality is, to become a leader that actually has a positive impact on an organization, that has an enduring impact to help that organization flourish, and that does common good in our communities and in our world, those leaders have to be developed and equipped and prepared to be able to do that. And you do that from experience. You do that from learning from others. You do that from delving into what leadership qualities are, focusing on leadership development and growing as a leader yourself. And all leaders can, anyone who's in leadership position in one sense has been made from the sense of their environment and their experience, their training, their equipping that have led them and brought them to where they are. You know, when I first was called as a president really in 2007 and started that journey, I began to meet with other university presidents. This is what I felt called to and dreaming about from a vocational standpoint, a calling that I really believe comes from God for my life. And, you know, that training and equipping is so essential because that sets you up ultimately to be able to help an institution or an organization or a business or a church flourish.
Mm. This is another perfect segue into my next question. But as I was preparing for this interview, I ran across your inaugural address at Southwest Baptist, and you said something that I thought was really pretty perfect for kind of this conversation. You said, "We're making world changers at SBU, and we will stand unapologetically for our biblical convictions as a Christ-centered transformational institution." How does leadership from that perspective not only impact the work of the church, but the impact of work at Christian education institutions of higher learning like Cedarville, like SBU?
Absolutely. Yeah. And very much sister institutions. You know, both institutions are Christ-centered universities, unapologetically Christ-centered. We are preparing and equipping Christ-centered students. And, you know, at both institutions, you know, at Cedarville for the Word of God and the testimony of Jesus Christ, which resonates with who we are at SBU as well. You know, we talk about being a Christ-centered, caring academic community, preparing servant leaders to impact the world for Jesus Christ. And what we mean by that is we're preparing servant leaders, not just any kind of servant leader, but Christ-centered servant leaders who are going into the world to impact the world, otherwise to make a difference in the world for Jesus Christ. It's which why I say that we're world changers, and we're making change in the world for Jesus Christ, for a purpose in a global society. So we're preparing and equipping our students as servant leaders. And I differentiate that a bit because I think it's important when we think about servant leadership. You know, the concept of servant leadership is obviously rooted in scripture. The words servant leadership were actually coined by someone in 1970 by Robert Greenleaf. And the idea of servant leadership, which is rooted obviously in biblical truths, has really become popularized over the last 50 years. I mean, we have servant leadership in any kind of sphere, right? And the aspect of that servant leadership that Greenleaf, who was a Christian, emphasized was that the servant leader is servant first. Otherwise, they're not leader first, they're servant first. They come here. And I think while he doesn't directly draw from biblical truths, or he doesn't explicitly talk about biblical truths, it's all implicitly about biblical truths. Obviously, Jesus was the quintessential servant leader. The biblical servant leadership model that we believe and teach comes out of Jesus' life, in which Jesus, even in Philippians 2, says he left his position in heaven, came to earth in humility, otherwise stripped himself of all of his position, and he came as servant first. That's who Christ was. He came as servant first. In fact, on our campus, we actually just this past year, as part of the inauguration, installed a statue of Jesus washing the disciples' feet. And that's a visual picture to remind us that when Jesus came into the world, he came to serve first. And through that, he was exalted into the role and the position that every knee shall bow and every tongue confess that Jesus Christ is Lord. But he came as servant first. He left the idea of position. And too often we think of leadership as position, right? But leadership actually isn't a position. Leadership is an action. It's something we actually do as opposed to something that we are in a position. Now, there are certainly leaders that are in positions, and I serve as a president. I have a position. I have legitimate authority as a president. But what makes me a leader isn't my position. What makes me a leader is the actions that I take and how I serve others.
You've kind of touched on this, and it might be repetitive, but is there a distinction between Christians who are leaders and the Christian perspective on leadership and just what the world says about leadership?
Well, that's a big question to unpack. I will say this: when I talk about biblical leadership, you know, I'll start in places like Titus, I think, which is a really helpful place to begin. If you look at places like Titus 1, where Paul unpacks what are the key attributes for an elder, same thing in 1 Timothy. I think it's important as we look at these texts, these are applicable to all leaders. And sometimes I say, in thinking about biblical leadership, listen, the model, the expectation should be rooted in these things, to be above reproach, otherwise to be a person of a character and integrity, to be someone, you know, when we're thinking about biblical qualities, a faithful reputation, someone, you know, the Bible talks about a husband of one wife, meaning that it's someone that has a faithful reputation, that they're humble and they're level-headed, that they're sober-minded, that they're the kind of people that are peaceful and generous, you know, they're not in it for themselves, that they're giving to others or creating a life-giving environment, that they're hospitable and they, you know, they're lover of good, doing what's right. All of these lists, all of those categories in Titus are true qualities, whether you're a Christian leader, a non-Christian leader, whether you're in a Christian institution, a non-Christian institution, secular, secular. You know, the reality of leadership is the leadership qualities are all rooted in biblical truths. In fact, that's one of the things as you survey the literature, all of these actually are rooted back into the Bible. And again, they may not be explicit, but they're so clearly defined in Scripture. So I think the difference is the way in which we think about leadership and the qualities and the characteristics that we have, and thinking about biblical leadership. And I use that terminology of biblical leadership to frame it. And here's a couple reasons I do that. One, there are different kinds of leaders, and I'll just give an example. And you know, this is a very common example. Was Hitler a good leader? Well, I would say Hitler was not a good leader. He was not for the common good. He was not serving people, and he wasn't serving the common good. But if you just look at leadership attributes, did Hitler have a lot of followers? Yes. Did people follow willingly? Most. He set himself as a Führer. So you could actually say that Hitler was a great leader, but he wasn't a good leader. And I think when we think about a leader, someone who is leading others, that people are willingly following, why are they following that person? Is that person for the common good? Is that person making an impact in the world for the common good? And from a biblical standpoint, we would say that for Christ's kingdom, for Jesus Christ, that we're impacting the world for Jesus Christ. So there are differences and there are distinctions, I think, and thinking about what is the impact of that person and their leadership, and are communities and societies better because of that leader? I think that is a biblical truth and a biblical leadership.
I think one of the things we're seeing in our country and just kind of in the world right now is a lack of those kinds of good leaders that you're talking about.
That's exactly right.
And go ahead, sorry.
Yeah, well, I want to tie into that because I think this is a really important point. If we trade character for competencies, we have to look at character first when we think of leadership, because character ultimately determines what kind of leader that person is going to be. If we only look at success and we only look at competencies, that this person can lead or that this person can change around an organization, but are they doing it for the common good, or are they only doing it for themselves? Do they have the kind of character qualities? And I think what's missing today, whether it's in politics or whether it's in our community leadership or organizations, sometimes we'll trade character for competencies. And we just look at competencies first. Listen, competencies can be learned, but character literally means etched in stone. It's something that you have to maintain and earn and work on. And that character development is so essential and important. And I would say in our society, we have lost the clarity of what leadership means. We look for results as opposed to character, and we look for the wrong things and competencies that we need to be starting with character first. And I would say that is a biblical clarity that Titus and 1 Timothy both start out with, both of them saying, be above reproach, otherwise be people of a character and integrity.
Christian higher education has certainly not been immune to, you know, leadership problems. We're blessed at Cedarville with good leadership. You're obviously in a great position of leadership at SBU. But your PhD thesis, you wrote on kind of this X factor on why there might have been, you know, vacancies or problems filling presidencies at Christian higher education. Can you talk about maybe what that X factor is that kind of makes presidents at Christian higher education institutions successful? And you might have already touched on it a little bit.
Yeah, well, you know, my dissertation is an interesting study. I basically compared the large population of universities, which there's about 5,000 colleges and universities across America. And I looked at a small subset of those universities, which were part of the Council for Christian Colleges and Universities, which is about 120, maybe even 150 now, but at the time around 120 of those colleges and universities. And what I really wanted to do was a comparison to say, are there any differences between the presidents of these larger population of institutions and this smaller subset of institutions. A lot of that was everything from demographics to backgrounds and experiences to the kinds of things that they enjoy and love. What I found was there were really not a lot of statistically significant differences in the fact that most institutions, whether Christian institutions or whether they are independent college and universities that maybe were historically faith-based or whether they're completely public universities, the reality is the majority of presidents spend their time fundraising, budgeting, and planning for the future. So thinking about vision and envisioning the future and strategic planning. You know, the day-to-day operations of those presidents are very, very similar. It's strategic resource management, it's change management, it's collaboration with all of the different constituents. Where I started that research, and I used the research for the American Council of Education, every 5 years, they actually survey presidents, and about half of those presidents participate in that survey. So it gives you a very large population to study from. And I was able to isolate through the American Council of Education that subset of presidents. Now, I didn't look at things like, because it wasn't included in the research, I didn't look at things like the character competencies and qualities that we're talking about right now. We talked more about, you know, what do presidents do? So I was looking at the X factors of what presidents do, not necessarily who they are. But one of the quotes, I have to read this quote because I think it's so, if we have time for it, I think it's such a, I think it's an important quote that I absolutely love. This was written by the person who developed the California university system back like in the 60s. And this is what he said. He said, the university president in the United States is expected to be a friend of the students, a colleague of the faculty, a good fellow with the alumni, a sound administrator with the trustees, a good speaker with the public, an astute bargainer with the foundations and federal agencies, a politician with the state legislature, a friend of the industry, labor, and agriculture, a persuasive diplomat of the donors, a champion of general education, a supporter of the professions, particularly law and medicine, a spokesperson of the press, a scholar in his own right, a public servant to the state and the national levels, a devotee of opera and football equally, a decent human being, a good father and husband, an active member of the church, and above all, he must enjoy traveling in airplanes, eating meals in public, attending public ceremonies. And then he says, he goes on to say, no one can be all of these things, and some succeed at being none. And I think what that led me to was we need to develop leaders. We need to be thinking about leadership development. And I would say over my lifetime of the last 30 years in leadership, whether it's been in the church or higher education or business or healthcare, the experiences that I've had have identified we do have a void of leaders in many areas, whether it's in higher education or whether it's in public square or the public sphere or politics, or whether it's in the church. And, you know, I've been and seen and across all of those different spheres, leadership failures that have led to cataclysmic impacts in organizations and communities. And there are plenty of stories to tell. Now, there's lots of great stories of transformational leaders who have created life-giving environments, who have changed organizations for the public good and the good of the people and the followers and made change and difference. And so I don't want to just suggest that there's only a vacuum of leadership. I think God has raised up great leaders in lots of places. But the reason I bring that up specifically about higher education is my research indicated that there was an aging population of presidents and there was going to be a turnover, which we've actually seen. So I wrote my dissertation, published it in 2014, so almost a decade ago. And we've been seeing this ongoing transition of presidents. In fact, in the CCCU, there's been a record number of transition of presidents over the last number of years. Some of that's COVID related, some of that's some other impacts. Some people waited longer to retire, and then they decided to retire. You know, maybe they were going to retire at COVID. COVID happened, and they decided to wait a year or two to create stability for their organization. But what we see in this is we see this transition taking place of leaders, and what kind of leaders are going to fill those positions, and what are the qualities and characteristics of that? you know, for me, when I think about leadership, I'm thinking about the person who is thinking about the visionary vision, envisioning the future for the organization. One of the dynamics of that is also the strategy for that institution and, of course, how you're actually going to accomplish that. The president stays at the top level of that, of the vision, of envisioning the future and where are we headed and helping with strategic planning and creating a pathway to get there. And part of that leadership development is thinking about the kind of leaders we need, of not just for the CCCU or Christian college universities, but for all industry across the world, which is one of the reasons I'm passionate about equipping leaders to go into the world to make an impact, whatever sphere of life. One of the things I tell our students, whatever sphere of life God calls you to, whether you're in education or you're in healthcare or you're in law or business or engineering, whatever sphere of life God calls you to, plug into that community, get involved, lead yourself, lead others, lead organizations for the public good and ultimately to impact the world for Jesus Christ.
There's so much good information there. If we're talking about making those world changers, what would you say to students who are maybe not at institutions like SBU or Cedarville that have an interest in a focus on developing these kinds of students to seek out those opportunities, whether it be on their college campus or in a church or through a local community?
Yeah, absolutely. Well, I think mentors are so important. You know, I taught with General Reno, I taught leadership. When I was at Cedarville, I actually taught one of the leadership classes, and General Reno would teach one semester, I would teach the other semester. And, you know, it's so important as we think about what are the qualities of leadership and what are the qualities of becoming a leader. But at the end of the day, we really need to have leadership development opportunities. And part of that is not just in the classroom, but part of that's experientially. So one of the things I would argue that the leader that I am today is framed and made up because all of the mentors that I've had for the past 30 years. So, you know, I mentioned people like Dr. Moeller. My first 5 years of my career were shaped by what I consider to be an excellent leader, someone that's a good leader, a great leader, someone that helped impact my life to change an organization for the good and to impact the world for Christ. And having that experience to be mentored by someone over the last 30 years, I've constantly sought that out. When I was at Cedarville, I had the privilege and the opportunity to mentor almost all of the SGA presidents while I was there, to mentor a lot of students. You know, engaging in that kind of mentoring, I think, is essential because, one, it's helping us reproduce ourselves, but it's also, as people have poured into us, it gives us opportunity to pour into others. And that impact through that relationship of mentoring others and equipping them. I still keep in contact, by the way, some of those who have graduated from Cedarville. I was in DC just a few weeks ago advocating on the Hill for Christian education and for independent colleges and universities. And as I was there, I actually met with two of our Cedarville grads. I met with some SBU current students who were there on the Hill and some SBU alumni who were there. But I say all of that to say staying connected with those, continuing to invest in their lives, having that lunch to talk through difficult circumstances and challenges, having those mentors in our life, they help us become the leaders because they give us someone to model. And we start with Christ as our model. We build from that as a role model. As leaders, we model the way, we lead in such a way that we're modeling what good leadership looks like and what it means to be a great leader as a biblical leader and as one who is committed to serving the interest of others.
I think sometimes we look at leadership, and as you mentioned earlier, we look at kind of the positions it leads to. And we often think of leadership as a path to success. What advice do you have for people listening on how to frame success from a biblical worldview as it pertains to leadership? Not just looking at the positions leadership may lead to, but like the kind of the impact, the actual world-changing impact that leadership can have.
Yeah, that's a great question, John. You know, I would frame it this way. I would say the impact and success of leadership isn't what you do while you're leading an organization. It's the impact and the enduring impact that remains after you're gone. And here's why I say that. As leaders, we're culture changers. We change a culture for the good that endures beyond us. Now, obviously, we can't control that forever. You know, that an organization can change over time with different leadership. But the kinds of cultures that endure, the kind of change that you lead as a leader, the kind of impact that you have as a leader that's enduring, that's how I measure impact of leadership. Not someone who can necessarily come in, fill a leadership void, lead an organization forward, and then you strip that person out and everything falls to pieces. Then everything's built on the leader, right? No, if you're actually focused on the follower, then you can be the kind of leader that creates a life-giving environment that's bringing transformative change both organizationally and individually. Otherwise, you unleash the power of that life-giving environment to ultimately bring transformative change to individuals and teams and organizations that then they flourish, and as they flourish, it continues upon itself, right? So you know, one of the ways I describe that is oftentimes I've been put in given opportunities for leadership of taking engines that aren't exactly working well or maybe broken, putting them back together, fixing them so that they continue continue on beyond the time that I'm there, where it just at that point you're just adding gas to the engine and it continues to go, and creating that environment. And I call it a life-giving environment. I think that's for me, that's a secret ingredient of what it means to create a culture that where followers not only want to be there, but their lives are being transformed, but they're also being empowered and encouraged and set on a trajectory to become the best leaders they can be.
This has been a really wonderful conversation, Dr. Melson. I think the last question I'd ask you, apart from the Bible, what books or resources or preachers or spokespeople do you advise people to listen and to read from and learn from to kind of gain not just that practical experience, but really that character development knowledge necessary for good leadership?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, there's so many good books. I'll just mention a few. You can see all the books behind me. Many of these are leadership books. Many of these are books on different aspects of leadership and everything from Christian education and ministry and servant leadership, all different types of books. But a couple books that I'll mention that I think are really, really helpful. One is called The Leadership Challenge. It's by Kouzis and Posner. And in that book, they identified 5 practices of exemplary leadership, which are model the way, inspire a shared vision, challenge the process, encourage others to act, and enable others to act and encourage the heart. Those 5 practices, I think, really sum up in many ways, but and Kouzis and Posner's also have a similar biblical worldview that we have and Christians as well. But out of that, the idea of modeling the way, inspiring a shared vision, challenging the process, ability to enable others to act and encourage the heart, those 5 practices in a lot of ways are rooted in many of the other books that are found. So I think that book's a really helpful one. There's lots of great books like John Maxwell has a book called The 21 Irrefutable Laws of Leadership I find very helpful. Dr. Moeller has a book called The Conviction to Lead, which I think is really helpful. I love Peter Drucker. Peter Drucker, in his work, he talks about management. It was the buzzword of the day. In a lot of ways, a lot of what Peter Drucker talks about is actually leadership. But there's like a book called The Effective Executive by Peter Drucker. I think I find really helpful. There's depending upon what sector or what sphere. I mean, you know, there's a dozen books that I could recommend in lots of different areas. But I think those help frame, you know, some key things that I think are really, really helpful for us. Oswald Sanders has Spiritual Leadership, which I think is an excellent book. It's one that's been on many, many bookshelves for many, many years, and I think is really valuable in that sense. So, I think those would be kind of maybe my, you know, top 5 as far as recommendations.
Well, Dr. Melson, thank you so much for coming on. As is the tradition on our podcast, we give our guests the last 60 seconds to share anything that may be on their heart or that they didn't get to address over the last couple minutes we've been chatting. So the last 60 seconds are yours.
Yeah, well, I think first of all, I want to thank you. You know, it's a privilege and opportunity to lead. And I think as a leader, I'm reminded that of every day. I don't do this on my own power or my own abilities. In fact, you know, every morning when I get up, I said, you know, God, I can't do this on my own. I need you. I need the empowerment of the Spirit to do the work that I do here. So, you know, I pray every day for God's favor, for wisdom and discernment. Those are things that you know, when we don't have wisdom, God says, ask for wisdom. God gives us wisdom. I think as leaders, we need wisdom and discernment. I pray for God's favor. I think that's important. But the most important thing is that anyone that has a sense that they feel called to lead, they can learn to become a leader. They can develop the character qualities, the attributes of leadership. And I'll leave it on this one. And this is a great Missouri quote here from Truman. You know, not all leaders or not all readers are leaders, but all leaders are readers. So I would just encourage on that. I'm looking behind you. There's lots of books. You're looking behind me. There's lots of books. And it's not that we just become, that we just learn things for knowledge sake. We learn them so we can apply them and that so we can make an impact in the world for Jesus Christ.
Well, Dr. Melson, thank you so much for joining us. That's wonderful advice. We really appreciate the opportunity to have you on.
Absolutely. Thanks for the invitation, Johnny.
Of course. Thank you so much for listening to this week's episode of the Cedar 60 podcast. We hope you'll join us next time as we continue to engage with culture and politics from the distinctive lens of the gospel. Make sure to like and subscribe to this podcast on all major platforms, and don't forget to share it with your friends and family. We hope you'll join us next time. Thanks so much.